أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين At the end of Surah Uruj we came across a couple of verses which discussed the place of the Qur'an somewhere different from what we know in this world. In verses number 20 and 21 it says بَلْ هُوَ قُرْآنٌ مَجِيدٌ فِي لَوْحٍ مَحْفُوظٌ Rather it's a glorious Qur'an in a preserved tablets. The idea was of course brought up in a couple of traditions as well which talk about Lawh al-Mahfuz which tells us a little bit about the mechanism of how the revelation comes down from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to a chain of angels coming down to the Prophet peace be on him. Now the idea of Quran being in sublime and very high place is mentioned in two other places in the Quran as well. So in all in three places with three different terms of course. Here we have بَلْ هُوَ قُرْآنٌ مَجِيدٌ فِي لَوْحٍ مَحْفُوظٍ It talks about a preserved tablet. In Surah Al-Waqi'ah we have فَلَا أُقْسِمُ بِمَوَاقِعِ النُّجُومِ وَإِنَّهُ لَقَسَمٌ لَوْ تَعْلَمُونَ عَظِيمٌ إِنَّهُ لَقُرْآنٌ كَرِيمٌ فِي كِتَابٍ مَكْنُونٍ لَا يَمَسُّهُ إِلَّا الْمُطَهَّرُونَ I swear, or I do not swear, by the place of the stars, that this is an honorable Quran generously giving meanings and guidance in a sealed, in a concealed book. في كتاب مكنون لا يمسه إلا المتحرون No one has access to it but المتحرون Now المتحرون could be the angels who are purified of all evil and blemishes of the human life or may include as well those who are purified among the human beings which is certainly the viewpoint of all Shiite scholars that those who are purified among the human beings like the Prophet peace be on him and Aimma alayhi salam have access to that meaning as well إِنَّهُ لَقُرْآنٌ كَرِيمٌ فِي كِتَابٍ مَكْنُونٌ لَا يَمَسُّهُ إِلَّا الْمُتَحَرُونَ لَا يَمَسُّهُ The pronoun goes back to that kitabun maknoon. Those who have returned the pronoun to the Qur'an, innahu la Qur'anun kareem, they say that you cannot touch the Qur'an without wudu. Because it says very clearly, la yamassuhu illa al-mutahharun. No one would touch the Qur'an but mutahharun if we say the zamir goes back to Qur'an. However, this is not the common view. That's why we believe that it's makruh. To touch the Qur'an and of course a precaution to touch the Qur'an without wudu which is the fatwa of all our ulama nowadays however this shows that the zamir goes back according to them to kitabun maknoon no one would touch that kitabun maknoon unless the mutahharun this is another place where the idea is discussed and there is another concept here which is brought up at the beginning of Surah Az-Zukhruf. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ha Mim wal Kitab al-Mubin. Inna anzalnahu Qur'anan Arabiyan la'allakum ta'qilun. We have sent it down a book in Arabic in a language of your languages of course. and since the audience were Arabs, it was sent down in Arabic so that you can understand it, so that you may understand it. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَعَقِلُونَ. However, when it comes to another place, there is no language for this. وَإِنَّهُ فِي أُمِّ الْكِتَابِ لَدَيْنَا لَعَلِيٌّ حَكِيمٌ. This very book, which is now revealed in Arabic, and we have made it into Arabic language through the Prophet, peace be on him, has a place in Ummul Kitab, which is with us, which is beside us, Ladaina, and that is not understandable for anyone. Ali here means higher than your understanding, according to many exegetes. Higher is higher than your understanding at that level. La Aliyun Hakim. Now, Hakim is a concept attributed to the Quran, which may have two meanings. One is that it's full of wisdom; it's a wise book, a book which teaches you wisdom. The other meaning, which is probably meant here, and Allama Tabatabai has also preferred this meaning in this very specific verse, is that Hakim is from Hikmah, being bound. It means it is not separated yet. It is not made into concepts yet. It is something beyond concepts, beyond words at that level. In Ummul Kitab, Ladayna La'aliyun, is beyond understanding, and that's why no one can touch and understand it except Mutahharun, and it's beyond words. It's not put in words yet. Hakim, La Aliyun Hakim. So we have three concepts here in which by which the Quran is explained to be at a sublime level of dignity and closeness to God. One is Allah al-Mahfuz, mentioned in this surah, in Surah Al-Buruj. One is Kitabun Maknoon, a concealed book, and the other one is Ummul Kitab. Now, if we think about these three different terms, we'll find out that these are all descriptions. They are not name of something, they are descriptions of something. And therefore, it is quite reasonable to think that these are descriptions, different descriptions for the same thing. And that is why all exegetes say that Lawhun Mahfud, Wa Kitabun Maknoon, Wa Ummul Kitab, they are all the same thing. They refer to the same thing, however they describe that same thing in different ways. Ummul Kitab, because of everything is the origin and root of it. And therefore, that book is the origin and root of everything in this world. That's why it's called Ummul Kitab. It's Maknoon, it's Kitabun Maknoon, because there is no access to it for anyone, even for angels, except for very, very few elite angels. No angel has even access to that concealed book of God, which is a book of creation, but at a concealed level, at a level which is much, much higher, at a dimension which is completely different from this dimension of life that we have here, this dimension of creation. And it is Lawhun Mahfuz, because Lawh is something which appears to some, Yaluhu. However, it appears to them while there is no change in it. It's protected from change. Mahfuz means mahfuzun min at-taghyir wa at-tabdil, protected from change. So that one entity is described in these different ways. One is Lawhun Mahfuz, the other is Kitabun Maknoon, the other is Ummul Kitab. Now, it's interesting that this very book, in many different places of the Quran, is described to be Kitabun Mubin, a very clear book. And how does it go with Kitabun Maknoon, a concealed book? How could a concealed thing could be a very clear thing? Well, of course, when God looks into it, it's very clear. Everything is clearly, distinguishably placed in that book. Nothing is missed in that book. Everything وكل شيء أحصيناه في إمام مبين. Everything we have put into that Imam also means a tablet. In that tablet, and which is quite clear, very clear. Of course, it's clear to us. It's concealed when it's referred to you or to those angels who do not have that high level. Now, why should God refer to the Quran at that level? Of course, everything has a sort of mention in that very high level. Even us, as creatures, have a sort of shadow, so to speak, there. Or we are shadows of what is there of us. We are there in that book, and we are just shadows of that high thing which Allah has created. And certainly we are going higher and higher and higher to reach very close to what is written in that very clear book. Why in these places the Quran is mentioned to have a reality in that protected book, in that Imamun Mubin, in Kitabun Maknun? The reason is because many people, and these, especially in these places where this argument with the kuffar is going on, they think that it's from the Prophet. They thought that it's from the Prophet. They thought that the Prophet can change it if he wishes. They even sometimes suggested to him that just change a little bit of it so that we could make a compromise with each other. وَلْمَا يَكُونُ لِي أَنْ أُبَدِّلَهُ مِنْ تِلْغَاءِ نَفْسِي. I cannot, of course, change these things from myself, because this has not come from me. This has come from that sublime book of Lawhul Mahfuz or Ummul Kitab. And that is why this reality has been brought up several times in the Quran, that this is not something which Prophet could have any influence on. It is already written in that book. In that book, this is a book which is beyond your understanding. We have made it understandable through this Prophet. وَإِنَّمَا يَسَّرْنَاهُ بِلِسَانِكَ. We have made this understandable, easily understandable through your tongue. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been understandable at all. We have sent it down and down and down. It has been descended and descended and descended. And that's the meaning of anzalnahu. Inna anzalnahu, certainly it doesn't come from a high heavens to the earth, so to speak, physically. It comes from that sublime place, that high level of creation to a lower level of creation, and this is the meaning of enzal or tanzil, so that they could understand it. So what we gather from all these is that the Quran at the beginning of creation, whatever it may mean, because we really don't know what is the meaning of beginning of creation, because beginning involves meaning of time. And the creation was created when there was no time. And therefore, we don't know what's really the meaning of beginning of creation. But we use it because we have no other choice. We have to use this word. At the beginning of the creation, this Quran and all other, of course, creatures were created at the level of this Ummul Kitab or protected tablets, for which there is no change whatsoever. And then after that, the creation was unfolded at its lower and lower levels. And this is the meaning of many of these traditions, a couple of which we discussed last week, which we want now to discuss in some more details, which gives us some sort of understanding about the metaphors used in these traditions. Now, first of all, about the qalam, It is in many traditions that the qalam wrote whatever Allah wanted and it dried. It wrote whatever should happen until the day of judgment. So there is no change in that. It is something which certainly when Allah wants to create, He creates in a blink of an eye everything together. It doesn't come in a process. وَمَا أَمْرُنَا إِلَّا وَاحِدَةٌ كَلَمْحٍ بِالْبَصَرِ. Our command is one. We said be and everything was. That's all. Now this of course gives us the idea of predestination of everything, isn't it? If everything is already in that protected tablet, therefore we have to introduce other concepts, because Allah is outside time. We have to introduce other concepts which can somehow accommodate the concept of time, and therefore there is a tablet below this tablet which allows and accommodates change and time. So at one level the creation does not allow change and does not allow the concept of time, because that comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is beyond change, beyond time. But since we are creatures inside time, and since we are dictated by change, so it is very, very difficult to understand how could we be connected to God, because God is beyond change, beyond time. We are in time, we are dictated by change, we are influenced by change. How these two, and we are connected together because we are His creatures, and creatures not in the sense that we are created at one time and then He has left us to ourselves. No, at every moment He is in process of creation. كُلَّ يَوْمٍ هُوَ فِي شَأْنٍ. Now you said that everything was created right at the beginning and that was it, and again you say everything is in a process of creation and Allah is every day doing something, and when you say every day means again Allah is dictated by time, He is influenced by it. Now to somehow solve this problem, for us to understand, because it's very difficult for us to understand, we are very, very, very low in our understanding compared to the whole creation and compared to the one who has created them. They have said, yes, Allah has created this Lawhul Mahfuz, but at the same time He has created a sort of mechanism which the concept of time could be accommodated in it. And that's why there is another tablet below this, and that's Al-Lawhul Mahw wal-Ithbat. It is where time comes in. It is where change comes in, but it does not affect Lawhul Mahfuz at all. And that when change comes in, it means things can happen, could be decided, then could be revoked, deleted, other things can come in, you do dua, things might change, you do good things, it influences your life, you do evil things, it influences your destiny. These are, and then the free will, the concept of free will could be accommodated in that. So if we think only at the level of Lawhul Mahfuz, nothing of this could be accommodated. It's complete predestination, it's complete ruling of God over everything. But as I said, we are very low in our understanding. There are other mechanisms, other levels of creation that Allah has made so that to allow this concept of free will, change, time be accommodated. Okay, that's not our discussion now. Let's analyze these traditions a little bit. The easier tradition from Tafsir al-Qummi, قال اللوح المحفوظ له طرفان. We discussed it last session. This لوح المحفوظ, this protected tablet, is كتاب مكنون, is with God. Again, just completely put time and place outside your thinking when you are thinking about these things. It has two sides. Now, again, when we say side, don't think of physical sides. It's not something like that. Just for us to understand. Tarafun an yamin al-arsh. One side is on the right-hand side of the arsh. So that means, again, between this tablet and God, there are many other mediums. There is arsh. Above arsh, there are hujub. You know, God is a source which, if it is unveiled without these mediums, it burns everything. Nothing can remain. It's so rich in its, what we can say, in its energy, in its existence, that for other things to exist beside Him or as His creation, there should be some veils, some mediums. And of course, the one which is completely or 100% coming just after Him, that creation should be really, really huge. Should be something that can tolerate. And that's why we have in many traditions that that is the reality of Muhammad, peace be on him. Isn't it? Al-Haqiqatul Muhammadiyya. Not that he is Muhammad, peace be on him. That reality has manifested itself in the Prophet in this world, and he would return to that reality. That should be really, really huge in creation. Then comes other mediums, the hujub, which is between God and the arsh. Ar-Ruh al-Ladhi huwa ala malaikati al-hujub. When Imam Zain al-Abidin talks about a ruh which is in charge of these angels which are veils between God and arsh, and then comes arsh, and then arsh in itself is something completely out of our understanding, and then comes this protected tablet which is on the right side of the arsh. Now this is again something in which the whole creation is written in it, in a sense. Written not in the sense of handwriting, it's just again something to bring it close to our mind. And it has two sides. The side which is towards Arsh and God is looking into it could not be understood and could not be looked into by the angels. It's beyond them. There is one side which is attached to the archangel Israfil. And Israfil, tarafun ala jabhat Israfil. Now, why is it ala jabhat Israfil, on the forehead? Well, there is no physical form for Israfil, because the highest level of Israfil is the lowest level of that tablet. It can grasp it, but that is when it goes to its highest, to the peak of its existence. Then it can grasp what is written in Lawhul Mahfuz. فَإِذَا تَكَلَّمَ الرَّبُّ جَلَّ ذِكْرُهُ. When God wants to reveal something. Now, إِذَا تَكَلَّمَ الرَّبُّ, again, doesn't mean God speaks. It's just the things which are in Lawhul Mahfuz become, it's not always apparent for Israfil. They become apparent for Israfil, and he passes it. ضرب الله جبين إسرافيل فينظر في اللوح فيوحي بما في اللوح إلى جبرائيل. Then it can see what is in that loh. It passes it on to Jibreel. Jibreel itself cannot look into that. Is above him. So this is how actually the revelation comes down from Allah to Jibreel. There is a question and answer in Rasail al-Sharif Murtaza that someone asks him. And while I was reading this, I really thought that the people in the past were very clever in these religious questions. Now our religious questions are really, really nuts. I mean, the questions we put to our Mawlanas are really very, very simple questions. Now, someone asks him very complicated issues about Jibreel. And how is it created, and how does he receive revelation from God? How does God speak to him? Because again, it's not like interpersonal speech, certainly. And there, Sharif al-Murtada answers that revelation is actually something that Jibreel can see in the protected tablets in Lawh al-Mahfuz. Whatever should be revealed at a time to the Prophet, it appears on Lawh al-Mahfuz, and then from there Israfil takes it and gives it to Jibreel. There, of course, Sayyidul Sharif al-Murtada doesn't mention this medium between Lawh al-Mahfuz and Jibreel. Just says that Jibreel looks into Lawh al-Mahfuz, which of course does not contradict this as well. So, فَيُوحِي بِمَا فِي اللَّوْحِ إِلَىٰ جِبْرَئِيلِ. Now, this is how the Qur'an is in that protected tablet, and whatever should be revealed, there are no concepts, no words, so Jibreel receives it without that. And probably it is transferred somehow, translated into language. We don't know before Jibreel or after Jibreel. This is a mechanism we don't really know. The other one, which was a question of Sufyan ibn Sa'id al-Thawri, which we said he had a mystical tendency and a sort of longing for deeper understanding of religious concepts. He asked from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam about an-noon wal-qalam wa ma yasturun. What are these things? Now the Imam said, amma an-noon fa huwa nahrun fil jannah. Noon is a river in paradise. Now paradise, of course, is again like protected tablet beside God. إِنَّ الْمُتَّقِينَ فِي جَنَّاتٍ وَنَهَرٍ فِي مَقْعَدِ صِدْقٍ عِنْدَ مَلِيكٍ. Now, it's again, the protected tablet is لَدَيْهِ, and the paradise is عِنْدَهُ, is beside God. So, couldn't we say that the paradise is somehow the origin of the whole creation to which we have to return? We are shadows of our existence there now, and we would return to that if, of course, we are qualified and if we really have the merit to go back to that. So when we say noon is nahrun fil jannah, it means it originates from God, because jannah is beside God. Noon is a river in paradise, and Allah told him, ajmad, freeze, fajamada, it froze, fasara midadan, it became like ink, but not an ink like the black ink that we have. It's an ink from light. It became light. And that light, ثُمَّ قَالَ لِلْقَلَبُ اُكْتُبْ. Now, so at the beginning there was ink, the material of creation. It was not material, it's not matter, of course. And then the qalam, which by which Allah started to the creation, to put everything there in creation. فَسَطَّرَ الْقَلَمُ فِي اللَّوْحِ الْمَحْفُوظِ. The qalam started to write in the protected tablets. مَا هُوَ كَائِنٌ إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. Whatever is to be until the day of judgment. So the creator, the creation finished. And it was not a process of God saying to that river, freeze, and it froze, and then telling, no, it was all at the blink of an eye. وَمَا أَمْرُنَا إِلَّا وَاحِدَةً كَلَمْحٍ بِالْبَصَرِ. Just like that. فَالْمِدَادُ مِدَادٌ مِّن نُورٍ وَالْقَلَمُ قَلَمٌ مِّن نُورٍ وَاللَّوْحُ لَوْحٌ مِّن نُورٍ. It's all light. And when we say light, again, light is something physical for us. This is just another sort of metaphorical usage. It's a figurative type of usage when we use light here, because we have nothing which is source of energy and source of enlightenment, bringing things into light, than light itself. Now here Sufyan is perplexed as we are. What does it mean? قال سفيان فقلت له يا ابن رسول الله بين لي أمر اللوح والقلم والمداد فضل بيان. Okay, this قلم that you said, this لوح tablet that you said, that مداد ink that you said, explain for me more. وعلمني مما علمك الله. So these are not the things that we can learn, of course, through education. It should be taught to us by God, taught to them by God, and then we, of course, if we can, learn from them. And if we can't, that's fine, inshallah. When we go to the other world, we will realize the meaning of these things, inshallah. عَلَّمْنِي مِمَّا عَلَّمَكَ اللَّهُ. Teach me from what Allah has taught you. فَقَالَ يَبْنَ سَعِيدٍ لَوْلَا أَنَّكَ أَهْلٌ لِلْجَوَابِ مَا عَجَبْتُكَ. If you were not deserving an answer, I wouldn't have answered, because you are a man of deep understanding. فنون ملك يؤدي إلى القلم. Noon is an angel which brings things. It is one of the highest mediums. It's interesting. Allama Tawatawai has written an article about the world of the mediums between Allah and His creation, and why that grace which is pouring out creation should be diluted and diluted and diluted, so that, for example, some angels are created, then the whole universe is created, because otherwise it's not possible. That source is so strong which would just destroy everything. Noon is an angel which conveys to Qalam, to the pen. And Qalam is another angel. These are archangels above Israfil and Jibra'il. وَالْقَلَمْ يُؤَدِّي إِلَى اللَّوْحِ وَهُوَ مَلَكٌ. Now, why say they are malak? Why the Imam is insisting that they are malak? Because he wants to tell us that do not think of them in the form that you think in this world, like a pen, like the ink, like a tablet. No, do not think like that. They are creatures beyond our grasp, beyond our understanding. However, Allah has talked about it as a lawh and qalam because there is a very, very slight similarity between their function and the function that we have in this world of a tablet, a book, a pen, something like that. There is very, very weak similarity between them. And for us to understand, Allah has brought them like that. وَهُوَ مَلَكْ وَاللَّهُ يُعَدِّي إِلَىٰ إِسْرَافِيلِ. And then it comes to إِسْرَافِيلِ. إِسْرَافِيلِ يُعَدِّي إِلَىٰ مِكَائِيلِ. مِكَائِيلِ then transfer it to Jibra'il. وَجِبْرَائِيلْ transfer it to أَنْبِيَاء وَالرُّسُلِ. ثُمَّ قَالَ لِي. And then this very interesting last phrase. Then he told me, قُمْ يَا سُفْيَانْ فَلَا آمَنُ عَلَيْكَ. Now stand and go, because I am afraid that you are confused, or you lose your faith. When I'm talking about such things, you may lose your faith, because our faith is, we usually try to make a sort of neat and nice, easy framework for our understanding of these things. If something comes outside that, then we might lose our faith. So this بَلْ هُوَ قُرْآنٌ مَجِيدٌ فِي لَوْحٍ مَحْفُوظٍ is talking about an idea which is really sublime. And as I said, in several other places, this fact has been alluded to, that this Quran is not what you read only. There is a reality for it, which is لَدَيْنَا لَعَلِيٌّ حَكِيمٌ, beyond your understanding. It is beyond concept, beyond words, and that has been translated and transferred into these concepts, so that it has come to you, and therefore it is impossible for the Prophet to change one word of it, to bring something into it which was not part of it. And also, of course, there are other discussions here, like the Sab'at Ahruf. The Quran is revealed in seven words, or in seven languages, seven dialects, or whatever, which are related to this. That, inshallah, we leave this for some other occasion. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Thank you very much indeed, Sheikh. I know it's very complicated even for us. Any brothers, sisters, Nizam? You're still...
if you want to ask anything, there is no explanation beyond what I said, so...
I know. Yes, sister, please, yeah.
When you explained about the creation, did you say that time was the creation preceded or succeeded the creation of time, creation of the human beings? Was it were we created before the creation of time?
We, you mean human beings or the
entire universe?
The whole universe. Well, the time finds its meaning with the universe. So they are both created together. And therefore, when you want to say when this was created, it has no meaning, because it was created before the time was there. Time and universe were created together. So how can you say when the universe was created? It's a meaningless question.
Yeah, because the concept of time only came into existence with the creation of everything else.
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, okay. So it was timelessness before that.
There was no time. Time cannot exist without matter.
Yeah.
Although there are other theories that, yes, according to the Ptolemaic cosmology, that the concept of time was created before creation, and then creation was created in time. However, the question is moved to that very instance or that very moment where the time itself was created. When was it? Okay, we have no meaning for this question.
Mm-hmm. And I've missed something out. You said there were lawhul isbat, and what was the other one that meant?
Lawhul mahwa wal isbat, deletion and confirmation. So Allah deletes certain things and confirms certain things. Things might have been destined at that level, then certain are later on revoked, and other things come in place of it.
Right, okay. Can I have a few more queries? You know, we were talking about manifestation of Nure Muhammadi. Mm-hmm. Is the Holy Prophet a manifestation? So the when Allah decided to create the universe, He first created this concept of Nure Muhammadi. Yeah?
This is what we have in some traditions, and also some mystical schools are very adamant about this, that the Haqiqatul Muhammadiyya was the first thing which was created. But it was Al-Haqiqatul Muhammadiyya, not the Prophet himself. Yeah, we shouldn't confuse between
and,
the two.
And are all other prophets also in some respect manifestations of this very haqiqah?
Partially, not fully, of course. Yeah, partially.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Azra.
You mentioned that this Lawh al-Mahfuz the Kitab is protected. The fact that we believe that all the other scriptures, there was tahrif, why should we then consider the Quran that we have in our hands protected from tahrif? Could it not be interpreted that the one that is protected is in Lawh al-Mahfuz rather than the physical Quran that we have in our hands?
Yeah, of course, we do not prove the protection of Quran from tahrif by this concept. That's a completely different concept. The Torah as well in that Lawh al-Mahfuz is protected. All other books are protected. All creation is protected in that Lawh al-Mahfuz. So when we talk about the protection of Quran from tahrif, we talk at another level, of course. Now we talk of the Quran which has been descended from Lawh al-Mahfuz, has been made into words, is written in on papers. This is completely different, of course. There are various other arguments put forward for to prove that Quran was not distorted as against other other books of Revelation. One verse which they actually refer to, which completely, of course, or very nicely addresses what you said, is "Inna nahnu nazzalna dhikr wa inna lahu lahafizun." We have descended, made this text to descend from Lawhul Mahfuz to you, and then we protect it. This is, of course, a protection different from the protection of Lawhul Mahfuz, and many other arguments. Well, but I think the best argument for the fact that Quran is not distorted is that no one ever has provided a text from earliest centuries of Islam up till now which differs from this text that we have in hand. Of course, there are slight nuances of recitation, but no one has ever provided any text which is somehow different. And this text has been incorporated in many, many different books of history, theology, law, and other things, and no one verse of this that we find in those texts is different at all from what we have in our hand, or nothing is provided there which would say this is part of the Quran, but we don't find it here now. That's, of course, the sort of discussion we would bring forth for protection of the Quran from tahrif.
Thank you, Sheikh. Yeah, so first.
Alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
Sheikh, could you explain a little bit more about our reality and ourselves? I mean, for example, you say the Prophet's reality was so high, but we shouldn't misunderstand that that wasn't him. That was just his reality. And you say we come from Jannah, but certainly we have no recollection of this, and we don't consider that that's where we are from. So what is the difference between us and our reality?
No, not in the meaning that we come from there, meaning that we're living there. No, that's the origin of our creation. Now, our creation starts when we come to this world and open our eyes and can recollect things. That's the beginning, okay? Now, let's put Alamul Dhar and other things aside because that's a controversial issue. Now, for us to be created like this, there are realities which has been diluted to this level. So that we are, and we have realities. For example, we have a reality in Alam al-Misal, that's where we go. We have a reality in worlds beyond Alam al-Misal, which we will go, of course. However, that reality is somehow unzipped. It's zipped. We unzip it here. We unzip that reality here. And then when we go back, that reality finds its full form. Now there is a beautiful hadith which says that for every person in this world there is an image in Arsh. So that's the reality. However, that image is zipped. We will unzip it here. Now how? It says that when you prostrate or bow down or do salats or whatever good, your image there would follow you. Now this is a bit complicated, and I don't know whether we would be left more confused after saying this or not. Your image there would do it, and when the angels see that, because the angels are creatures which are so loving for closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whatever brings anything closer to God, they love it. And they go and they would like to somehow hug them and kiss them and do istighfar for them. So the hadith says when you perform a worship here, your image or misal there would do the same. And the angels, seeing that they do istighfar and they send rahmah for you, they ask God to raise your levels in paradise and all these things. But when a person commits a sin here, Allah will put a curtain in front of them so that the angels cannot see that, because the angels will really, really become annoyed by seeing such a thing. And that is a haqiqah there, okay? But it's something which would find its full realization by us going through all these things. And now Haqiqa Muhammadiyya is something similar to that. The Prophet would somehow realize himself or identify himself with that Haqiqa after going through this, they call it the arc of descent and ascent. After going through this, the Prophet would find its reality. These are, of course, some theories about this way, this description of creation. Some people do not accept it, many accept it. So this is how it is.
Any sisters? Yeah, okay.
Is Noon either? I think we said Noon was a river, and then later on that it was an angel. Which one is it? Is it an angel, or is it a river of frozen river of ink, or what is it?
It's both. Yeah, as I said, you see, these concepts are used because we can somehow connect to them, relate to them. Otherwise, if it says it's an angel, okay, it was an angel. We can now not relate to them at all. It's a river because it's the source of sort of emanation of something. That's how what we understand of river. Okay, but we are told it's angel so that we do not make a mistake that this is the river that you know in this world. It is a source of emanation of something coming. And then that is made as the main building block of creation, and Allah has created everything by that. Again, do not, when we say building block, do not confuse, it's an angel. So that's why I say it's both.
Thank you, Manjur.
If I can ask two questions. One which related to your last answer, that some of our masiyah is concealed from the angels also. Is this something which is referred in Dua-i Kamal also, that our masiyah is sort of concealed from the... That concept which comes in the Dua-i Kamal?
وَكُنْتَ أَنْتَ الرَّغِيبَ عَلَيَّ مِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ وَالشَّاهِدَ لِمَا خَفِيَ عَنْهُمْ. You see things which is hidden from them as well, yes.
Okay, that is one. The other thing is the creation of the Prophet initially, the first creation, which is after the God, the first creation, the reality of the Prophet. And the concept of the Imams and the Prophets being the Hujjah on the earth, is it related, that the concept?
Yes, certainly, of course, it is related. I mean, they are the cream of creation, or the cream of human creations, certainly. So there is a relation there. Yes.
Any sisters, before we come back to brothers? Yes.
Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. The first question is, Kalamhil Basar, if you can educate me in my Arabic.
Lamh is blink. Lam. Ka is like, is a letter for making similarity between two things. So ka lamh, like blink of basar eye, like blink of an eye. Kalam hel basar.
So we can safely say that the in the blink of an eye was first seen in the Quran, of course, so many thousands of years ago. It's now part of English. In the blink of an eye.
Yes.
The other question was, when you said about, let's say we presuppose that God is Nur, which is too big for us to understand. Straight away, in the mind of somebody who's read a little bit of Islamic history, you see two instances. First one was when the Prophet went for Mi'raj, and, well, before that, Musa went on the mountain, and he was struck down just by seeing a 1% example of the existence of God, for example. Can we somehow draw parallels between these two events and say that they were both talking about the same thing, or is it a completely different picture for both in terms of knowing and seeing your God?
No, they are different. I mean, Mi'raj is completely different from what Musa wanted to see from God in this world. Musa wanted to see God as he will be seen in the world of Akhirah, which is impossible. Mi'raj is different. Mi'raj was a tour to Alamul Mithal initially, not to Alamul Akhirah. And in some traditions we have that, for example, Prophet saw some people who, for example, they had practiced usury, and this, he saw them that they stand up, but their bellies are so big that they fell on the ground again, and they want to stand up, they cannot, they want to go and have some food, it's very difficult for them, and they say, Ya Rabbi Aqim Sa'ah, Oh Lord, bring the Sa'ah earlier so that I'm relieved on this. And then he's told, As-sa'atu adha wa amar, why are you hasting? That is more bitter and painful for you if the sa'ah comes. This shows it is was a tour in Alamul Mithal for the Prophet, which is completely different from what Musa wanted from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So if we understand the differences between the two, I don't think there is much qualitative difference between what Musa can understand and what the Prophet can understand. It might be some in terms of quantity, not quality, certainly.
Thank you. Any sisters? Is there a last question, Nizar?
Sheikh, just taking the illustration of today's lecture, I'm just thinking that of course it needs someone of your caliber to lead such discussion, and then may not, there may be many centers in the Western world where such discussions amongst our sisters and brothers occur. But then if I go and say in the religious centers of Qom and Najaf, etc., there must be hours and hours of such discussions at whatever levels. And then I say to myself, what about the previous time? And I say, yes, probably from the time of the Aimma, years of such discussion and such depth of discussion and such diversity of discussion. My question is, A, do the other madhab, Christianity, even Ahl-Sunnah, do they actually go and dwell at such depth? And my second question is, I leave my second question, I think it's rather provocative. I think I'll leave it at that.
La amanu alaykum, huh? I fear for you if I ask the second question. Well, Ahlus Sunnah, we know in Ahlus Sunnah the theology developed in a completely different way from Shia world. At the beginning, of course, the theology, the dominant theology was the theology of Mu'tazila. They were people of rational thinking, and in a sense extremists in that. And it's amazing that the first trend of thought which appeared in Islam theologically was that very, very extreme rational type of thinking, which they denied many things which was ordinarily believed by Muslims because they could not rationally establish it. And in front of them, of course, were Ahlul Hadith, who opposed any type of pondering and thoughts about these issues. And they said that you should not think about it, you should not ask about it, you just should believe in it. How, we don't know. The kayf غير معلوم. We don't know how these things are. And I have mentioned this from Malik ibn Anas, who was one of Ahlul Hadith, of course, the Imam of the Maliki faith, that when he was asked about how does Allah sits on the throne, Ar-Rahman ala al-Arsh istawa, kayf istawa, how does he sit, what does it mean Allah is sitting on the throne, he said that al-istawa'u ma'loom wal-kayfu ghayru ma'loom was-su'alu anhu bid'ah. We know that Allah sits on the throne because it is in the Quran. How, we don't know. Asking about it is bid'ah, because no one asked the Prophet. Of course, no one asked the Prophet. because of course the companions, probably those who were somehow not in the inner circle of these type of discussions, they were not concerned about these meanings, probably. So this was another trend. That Mu'tazili type of thinking was defeated after a few centuries by a new theological trend which somehow defended this Ahlul Hadith by rational arguments and by logical arguments, that is Ash'ari. Ash'ariya brought Kalam in a sense that they discussed all these things, but they refrained from going into depth. Now, in Shia theology, the case was completely different. I mean, these traditions that have come from A'imma alayhimus salam, you cannot find it in the sources of Ahlus Sunnah, because they have not discussed these issues. Going into such discussions, into depth of these discussions, well, the reason is very clear, because they didn't have the knowledge, and they had not asked the Prophet about it. The only person who ever asked about these things was Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam, who discussed these things with the Prophet. So since they didn't have the knowledge, they did not have such traditions in their sources. Therefore, I think you cannot find this level of discussion and argument that we have from our A'imma in any source of the Sunni traditions or Sunni theology. You can find it here in Shia theology. Of course, later on, Fakhruddin al-Razi, especially in his tafsir of the Qur'an, somehow incorporated many of these things, because he had studied all these traditions, incorporated these questions in his tafsir and tried to find some answers for them. And that's why his tafsir is very rich. And that's why it's rejected by many of Ahlus Sunnah, saying that this is just discussions that we should not enter into it. So this level, yeah, I think you can find it only in Shi'i traditions. And even in Shi'i traditions, unfortunately, many people just take them as their apparent meaning, and they try to explain it in that sort of framework and context, which makes no sense at all. And everyone would say, wow, these are just fabricated traditions that we should not accept.
Thank you much indeed, Sheikh. Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad Salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
And so next Sunday we start with another
session. Next Sunday, and then after that for 2 Sundays I'll be away, inshallah. So next Sunday we start Surah Tariq.
Yeah. Okay, and then you'll be away for
two
weeks, inshallah. Shukran.